La Crosse, Wisconsin, from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
On this Tuesday, April 23rd, with a wild bunch that includes Greg Bach and meteorologist Brittany Merlot. We've got more coming up. James Kelly, Civic Media reporter, will join us with some of the stories he's following. We'll hear from Chad Holmes. He'll preview his 8 a.m. show on Bull Falls Radio, part of the Civic Media Radio Network. We will hear from Vice President Kamala Harris, who was in La Crosse yesterday, talking to two different audiences, one about new nursing home staffing standards, and another more political event, reminding folks not to let up on the pressure to expose the danger to individual liberty that came in the wake of the Dobbs decision. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to have four Brewers tickets to give away to Saturday evening's game against the New York Yankees. So tune in tomorrow morning during the 7 a.m. hour for a chance to win four tickets to Saturday's game on this Tuesday, April 23rd, which is National Email Day. It's National Shakespeare Day. It's World Book Day. It's Movie Theater Day. It's Cherry Cheesecake Day. Why did nobody bring me a cherry cheesecake for Cherry Cheesecake Day?
I ate it.
Because I didn't tell anybody. English Muffin Day, National Picnic Day. It's School Bus Driver Appreciation Day.
Oh,
so if your kid already
that.
Got on the bus, it's too late. You look like a loser to your friendly school bus driver. But
oh, wow, Pat.
Maybe next
Way
year.
Way to celebrate.
It's National Table Tennis Day. And then finally, this is Army Reserve Day. It was 116 years ago in 1908 that Congress created the Medical Reserve Corps, the official predecessor of the Army Reserve. After World War I, Congress reorganized the armed forces by authorizing a regular army, a National Guard, and an organized reserve to ensure a peacetime pool of trained reserved officers and enlisted men. And that was something my dad served in for a very long time. And so I just want to salute the Army Reserve on their birthday here. All right, let's get to Brittany Merlot, the forecast for today. Let's first get an update, as always, from Tigerton, where Rob tells us that it's sunny and 49, but you really need some rain to get the scenery to green up and reduce the chances of wildfires. And yeah, there are some advisories for wildfire chances around Wisconsin. He also adds that Come On Eileen, song we played the last time along, last segment, was a popular song his freshman year in high school. Thanks for making me feel old, Rob. Love those old, great songs. They're now oldies. They're now oldies.
Pat,
and he says it's the favorite part of his show. So
far past
you.
That. I was listening to the classic rock station years ago, and they played The Black Crows.
No,
I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm just going to go to the old folks home and drink my dinner.
Yep. My AARP card is sitting here someplace. I got to put
back
that
in my day, the rock and roll music kept people on your lawns.
All right. Let's get to one of the few young voices on this program, Brittany. We've got pleasant conditions today, but a bit of a temperature roller coaster yet to ride.
Yes, we sure do. We have a lot going on here in the next 24 hours. So first and foremost, bright, beautiful. It's a gorgeous morning out there, and it's going to continue to be a nice afternoon as well. Mostly sunny to partly sunny skies today, and highs climbing to the mid and upper 60s. So pretty fantastic temperatures, but there's always the price to pay, and that's going to come this afternoon around 2 to 4 p.m. We are looking at storms firing up, and some of them have the potential to turn strong to severe. Now, if they do, the main threats with these storms this afternoon will be some large hail and some gusty winds that could blow around some objects. But we probably already put those all inside from the strong winds we've already been dealing with. So really just hail is the concern this afternoon. And like Rob said, we do need every drop of rain. So we'll take that because we dry out for tomorrow and temperatures crash cooler. In fact, another freeze is likely overnight as temperatures crawl into the mid to upper 20s. So another cold one out there. You don't want the plants outside. And we'll probably have another cold night tomorrow night too before we warm things up and get away from that.
It's a wonder to me that anybody plants anything in April.
I know.
Given that, I mean, some years it works out, but so many other years, it's like you're just tempting fate.
yep. to do that. Wait till like Mother's Day, right?
Yes, that's the rule of thumb is wait till Mother's Day. Good choice there. Brittany Merlo, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Temperatures around the state at 7 o'clock include 46 here on Lake Wissota, 36 in Hayward, 35 in Park Falls. Wausau is up to 49, as is Green Bay. La Crosse at 51, Rapids at 51, Oshkosh 53. Madison's at 52 degrees, and it's 52 right now in Waukesha as well. Okay, Vice President Kamala Harris was in Wisconsin. I was about to talk about former President Trump and his trial, but we'll get to that later perhaps. But Vice President Kamala Harris made two stops in La Crosse, part of her third visit to Wisconsin this year, along with so many other members of the Biden administration, including the president himself, showing that they are not taking Wisconsin voters for granted. We talked somewhat at length yesterday about one of the reasons for her appearance, and that was to announce some new minimum staffing levels at federally funded nursing homes. And while they don't go as far as some advocates for nursing home patients would like them to go to ensure quality care, there's also plenty of pushback from people noting the labor shortages out there and that it's already tough enough to find good people. It's going to be that much tougher if you increase staffing standards. Now, I don't know where the gray area is on this in enforcement or in terms of transition time until the new rule takes effect, but just the fact that there is going to be a minimum standard set is going to be a net positive for the 1.2 million people that are in nursing home care in the United States. Poorly staffed facilities helped lead to, you know, well over 100,000 COVID deaths in nursing homes. And so that was one of the reasons that the vice president came to Wisconsin to talk about that. The other was about abortion care and reproductive health rights. And the vice president spoke at a political function about the need to continue the pushback on the Dobbs decision, which repealed abortion rights that were found in Roe v. Wade. So I lifted a two and a half minute excerpt from what the vice president had to say about that to the crowd. This is just a little bit of the continuing messaging that you will be hearing from the Biden campaign, certainly not just to their base, but to any moderate voters and especially women who feel like whatever their political affiliation, the Dobbs decision was a step too far.
You know, there is so much at stake in this election. I know you all know that. That's why you are here instead of the 5,000 other things you could be doing. And I am very optimistic about what we are capable of. I know what we are fighting for. We're not fighting against something. We're fighting for all that we believe in to be good and right about our country. We love our country. We love our country. And we understand then what is at stake. The promise of America is the promise of protecting and respecting individuals' rights and liberty and freedom to make certain decisions, including those of heart and home. Almost 2 years ago now, the highest court in our land took a constitutional right that had been recognized from the people of America, from the women of America. And thereafter, in state after state, we've been seeing laws proposed and passed that would criminalize healthcare providers. In some states, providing prison for life for doctors and nurses who simply provide healthcare. Laws being proposed and passed that make no exception even for rape and incest. And many of you know I started my career as a prosecutor. You may not know why. So one of the reasons is because when I was in high school, I learned that my best friend was being molested by her stepfather. And I said to her, "You got to come and stay with us." I called my mother. My mother said, "Of course she does." And she came to stay with us. And so I decided at a young age I wanted to take on the work that was about protecting women and children from violence. The idea that some would be proposing and passing laws that say to a survivor of a crime of violence to their body, a violation to their body, that you don't have a right to make a decision about what happens to your body next? That's immoral. The government should not be telling her what to do with her body.
There was a little bit of what the vice president had to say in La Crosse yesterday, not just about abortion rights, but also talking about nursing home staffing and talking essentially about the care economy that we live in right now. It's a healthcare economy for, you know, baby boomers who are continuing to enter their senior years. It is a care economy in terms of childcare and the ongoing childcare crisis, where, again, workers are not looking to get rich doing this, but they're also looking not to be working for poverty wages. And there's another example recently of how people in the workplace are standing up for themselves. And that took place down in Tennessee the other day, where employees at a Volkswagen factory in Chattanooga overwhelmingly voted to join the United Auto Workers Union. It's a historic first test of the United Auto Workers' renewed effort to organize non-union factories. You know, the non-union factories have been going up for some time, primarily in the South, which has always been hostile to worker rights. And yet, in this instance, 73% of the ballots cast were for organizing as a union. So now both sides have this week to file any objections to the election. If there are none, the election will be certified, and Volkswagen must begin bargaining in good faith with the UAW. Keep in mind, it was the UAW that endorsed President Biden. He had walked a picket line for them last year, and he said in a statement that together, these union wins have helped raise wages and demonstrate once again that the middle class built America and that unions are still building and expanding the middle class for all workers. Let's take a quick look at sports at 7:18. The Brewers broke their four-game win streak. Pittsburgh broke their six-game losing streak. Pittsburgh winning last night 4-2. A couple of fielding errors by the Brewers were the real key. Brewers starter Joe Ross did well. 5 1/3 innings, gave up 2 runs on 6 hits. Reese Hoskins homered for the crew. But Wade Miley, who was supposed to be the pitcher tonight, is now back on the injured list with elbow inflammation. DL Hall is on the injured list. Pitcher Jacob Junis was hit by a line drive during batting practice yesterday. So the Brewers' pitching rotation right now, fill in the blank. We'll see who shows up to pitch tonight. 5:05 on News from the Center, WRJN and Racine and Oshkosh Air Support. Coming up with more after this on Up North News Radio. You're up north. And had the number one song this day in 1988. The Milwaukee Bucks start game 2 of their playoff series tonight against the Indiana Pacers. That'll be at the Fiserv Forum. And you can hear that game on 3 Civic Media radio stations, Lake Air and Amory, 98Q Country in Park Falls, and locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids. You can listen starting at 7 o'clock. Giannis Antetokounmpo not likely to play. But as the Bucks showed in game one, they can coalesce around, you know, the entire team, even when Giannis isn't part of it, and see if they can continue that pace coming up tonight in a home match, game 2, against Indiana. As part of Earth Day yesterday, Governor Tony Evers announced that the state of Wisconsin is going to plant 100 million trees by the end of 2030. That's actually 25 million more than he pledged just 3 years ago. Evers made the announcement to conserve 125,000 acres of forest in Wisconsin in collaboration with public, private, and non-governmental partners, according to a story from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's part of what's called the Global Trillion Trees Initiative. Because the more trees we can plant, the more carbon dioxide they can pull out of the atmosphere. They can be, you know, one of many ways to confront a changing climate. They are not the whole answer for those folks that are pushing back against trying to get rid of, you know, so much fossil fuel use and things like that. But yeah, planting trees is a big help. The governor signed this in the form of an executive order at a ceremony at Governor Nelson State Park just outside of Madison. The park is named after Wisconsin's former U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson, who is credited as the founder of Earth Day. And while there, the governor was asked by reporters some other questions, including the trial of former President Donald Trump, and also the things that Donald Trump continues to say about Wisconsin. Well, not just the things he continues to say, the lies he continues to tell about Wisconsin, and the way that that is leading to continued threats against Megan Wolf, the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Evers told reporters that state officials will do all they can to protect her safety, although, as he says in a story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel by Jesse O'Point and Molly Beck, he also acknowledges that the presumptive Republican nominee does have First Amendment rights. But Tony Evers also has the right to say what he thinks of Trump's remarks, and he starts off by saying, first of all, he's making accusations that are nothing but a freaking lie, Evers said. And then second of all, he's the guy that has the biggest megaphone in the world, and so how would anybody that's watching today feel about Donald Trump doing something like that to them? It's just irrational, end quote. Trump continues to mention Megan Wolf by name, and it has led Evers to add additional security measures for the state's top election official. Megan Wolf has basically become, shall we say, kind of the poster child for how the big lie can manifest itself in making good people lead harder lives for doing nothing more than their job and doing it well. But Trump, in an interview earlier this month with a conservative radio show heard in the Green Bay area, said, quote, Megan Wolf will try and steal another election. Trump said, Robin Voss should terminate Megan Wolf, and they should put somebody in who's going to be fair, not for the Republicans, just fair. And if they do that, we're going to win the election by a lot in Wisconsin. I've given out big ship contracts, a lot of big contracts that nobody else would have given to Wisconsin. I gave, and it never made sense to me, Trump said. Now we found out why. No, she should be gone. I'm just going to pause for a minute and let you try to figure out the word salad that's in the middle of all that, that apparently we're supposed to replace Megan Wolf at the Wisconsin Elections Commission out of gratitude that he awarded big contracts to the shipbuilders in Marinette, even though they were probably the best bidders and make the best products. But, you know, in Donald Trump's view, everything that he gave was a favor, you know, right down from delaying pandemic relief checks until they could change the machinery to have Donald Trump's signature on them. It's always transactional.
I don't know just how lucky we are. We're so lucky to have him. He's done so much for us. We should really just appreciate him. Mm-hmm. And we should just say, thank you, Mr. Donald Trump.
Well, and that's what he says. You know, whenever he says, he talks about the people around him and they're like, oh, sir, thank you, sir.
Yeah.
You're the greatest since Lincoln, sir. I love when he goes into that. Like, people tell me all the time. I'm like, there is nobody telling you that that doesn't have their tongue attached to your boot as they're licking it. There's no normal person who's saying, what a swell guy you are, sir.
And the people who would tell you that, the ones who come to his rallies and buy his Bibles and his shoes and his steaks and all those things, he would not ever speak to. Those are the unwashed masses that he cannot stand.
Exactly. He's not going to, you know, he's the germaphobe that he is. He's not working rope lines. What he does is he tosses things. He tosses baseball caps into the crowd. Like he tossed paper towels, mm-hmm. you know, to hurricane victims in Puerto Rico. And he refers to them as my people, as he did on January 6th. He said, those are my people. They would never harm me.
Yeah.
But would he actually do anything for them? No. No. The people he does things for, you saw on tape just the other day telling millionaires and billionaires at a fundraiser, I'm going to, you know, extend the 2017 tax cuts for you guys.
Yep.
And just scaring regular folks along the way. But the criminal trial of former President Trump will continue today. where the longtime former publisher of the National Enquirer is expected to tell jurors today about his efforts to help Donald Trump kill unflattering stories during the 2016 presidential campaign, all part of a hush money trial that relates to fraudulent business records, which are tantamount to election interference. There were opening statements by the attorneys for both sides yesterday, and now today expect the first witness to be David Pecker, the former National Enquirer publisher, who says that they worked with former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen on a catch-and-kill strategy to buy up and then spike any negative stories that might come out. Prosecutors said this was a planned, long-running conspiracy to influence the 2016 election to help Donald Trump get elected through illegal expenditures to silence people who had something bad to say about his behavior. Now, Trump's attorneys are saying that there isn't nearly the evidence that the prosecution says. They say President Trump is innocent. He did not commit any crimes. And they go on to say that there is nothing wrong with trying to influence an election. Well, yes and no. There are ways to influence an election through your speech, through your actions, all of which can be legal. It's another thing to try to influence an election through illegal, fraudulent business dealings that would silence people who would otherwise like to have their own persuasion with the voters. And that's the thing that jurors are going to be weighing in this case as it goes on throughout the next several weeks. We'll pause here for Pam Yonke and the Midwest Farm Report. Also, we will then come back with James Kelly, civic media reporter, to talk about some of the stories he's following, including today being a big day one way or another in the Ashland area around Northland College. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Tuesday morning, when you're here, you're up north. Be right back. I'm here with you. Dum, dum, dum. Orbison born this day in 1936. There's going to be a forum tomorrow at the UW Stevens Point Theater, tomorrow evening at 6:30, featuring the three Democratic candidates in the 3rd Congressional District. One of them will emerge from the August 13th primary to take on incumbent Republican Derek Van Orden, who's running for a second term in that western and central Wisconsin district. It's one of several forums between Katrina Shanklin, Rebecca Cook, and Eric Wilson, and you can hear it on three civic media radio stations in and around the 3rd Congressional District, including locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, The Eagle in La Crosse, and 93.5 The Tap in Chippewa Falls, which is where we're heading right now to catch up with James Kelly, civic media reporter based over at The Tap, just a stone's throw from me in downtown Chippewa. James, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning, Pat. How are we doing?
Good, good. Haven't had a chance to check in with you for a while, so we thought we'd see what kinds of things you're following throughout western and northwest Wisconsin. And the first thing we're going to talk about is something that will probably be news later on today. It is a big day up in the Ashland area. One way or another, James, you've got an entire community just on eggshells wondering what's going to be announced today.
Yeah, that's Northland College we're speaking about. This is the third deadline that they've set for whether or not they're going to decide to stay open or not. The first deadline was about 3 weeks ago where they decided instead to declare financial exigency and kind of reevaluate their situation after failing to raise the $12 million they needed to raise in about 3 weeks there as well. So now they've delayed that decision again, looking towards a new proposal that's been approved by the faculty council at the school, which, you know, it gives you a little bit of hope for the situation. These are smart people, professors at the college that say, okay, this plan works for us. So let's see if it works for the Board of Trustees as well. And that decision should be coming down today.
And there's no magic bullet here. There's no one right way to do this. There have been proposals that pare back significantly the course offerings and the activities offerings and try to just, you know, form a new smaller core to help the school grow. There are others who have proposed ways that could grow the student body, attract more students, more tuition paying students. There's also, of course, been strategies to just try to reach out to donors and ask them to be, you know, even more generous with their alma mater. So a lot of folks waiting to see what's going to happen up here, which we hasten to add, James, is not limited to Ashland, not limited to Northland. There are a lot of colleges and universities, many small, but some not so small, that are kind of facing these same fiscal and demographic pressures.
Yeah, even high schools around Wisconsin, right? How many school referendum questions did we see earlier in April on the ballot? Declining enrollment has been an issue for a lot of these schools since the COVID pandemic began. And Northland College in particular has had a really difficult time kind of funding their operations. They said between 2020 and 2022, and you know that's not even including the last 2 years, their endowment, which is essentially the school's rainy day fund, was depleted from $25 million to just over $6 million. And now we have another 2 years on top of that as well. I think what fascinates me about the entire situation the most is just the timeline. You know, this was kind of out of the blue in early March where they put out that call and said, we need to raise $12 million or this school is going to have to close. And we have about 3 weeks to do it. Well, if you're in these dire financial straits for going on the last 4 years, it feels like putting out a call for $12 million with 3 weeks to raise it is not really an effective winning strategy to get that money.
Seemed rather abrupt to many people up there. You know, and then others said, well, we just wanted to try to fix it behind the scenes, you know, as much as possible until they couldn't keep it under wraps anymore. But again, so much pressure being felt by colleges, by schools. Our friend Dan Schumacher, who is the athletic director up there, has talked not just at his capacity at Northland, but when he was at UW-Eau Claire, talked about the demographic cliff, the enrollment cliff that all schools are facing because the birth rate plummeted during the Great Recession of 2007, 2008, 2009. The fewer babies born then are just now coming to be of college age, and there's a lot fewer of them than there used to be. So even as they've been moving through the pipeline, we've seen that impact on K-12 districts, as you just alluded to, with all the referendums that have had to come up, because if you're getting per pupil state aid and there's that many fewer pupils, you get less state aid, but you still got to pay the light bill. You still got to put gas in the school buses and everything else. It's reached the point where there's a Minnesota school district not far from Duluth, all in your coverage area for news for Civic Media, that is coming up with a new calendar proposal for how schools would work in, what is this, the Carlton School District, southwest of Duluth.
Yeah, and it's an interesting strategy there. They would switch to a four-day work week for the students, really, only. Teachers would still work 5 days a week there and have that Friday to kind of, you know, plan out their next week, plan their lessons a little bit better, put some more time into creating the curriculum for the students. And on those Fridays, the school would offer a pretty cheap, affordable childcare for parents who have kids who are maybe, you know, third, fourth, fifth grade. You can't really leave them home alone, but you can't really afford childcare either because, wow, is that expensive these days? Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting plan, and it's something that we've seen some Wisconsin schools go to over the past couple of years as well.
And then another story you've been following out of the Chippewa Valley, of course, deals with the closure of the two HSHS hospitals, Sacred Heart in Eau Claire, St. Joe's here in Chippewa Falls, also several Prevea clinics, some 1,400 people being put out of work. And we have heard city leaders in Eau Claire, you know, very unhappy with how HSHS handled the situation. And they are still expressing their unhappiness and would maybe like to see some action taken as a result, James.
Absolutely, yeah. The Eau Claire City Attorney, Stephen Nick, a couple weeks ago sent a letter to the Department of Health Services saying, hey, we would like you guys to investigate this and make sure that HSHS completed all of the legal requirements it needed to complete to undergo this exit from the area. Now, whether or not they did complete all those legal requirements is one thing. You know, I may have flirted with law school, but I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to, you know, guesstimate or speculate on whether or not they successfully did that. But I think when your business is a hospital, and in a rural area, especially where there's not a lot of other healthcare options, there is an added moral responsibility as well. And I think what's really driving Eau Claire city leaders and state leaders really up the wall right now is the fact that, you know, they're accusing HSHS of maybe planning this closure for close to 2 years. And if that's the case, if this was something that was on the table for 2 years, it feels like there should have been a little bit more communication with the city, with the county, to say, hey, this is something that could happen in the future. So let's maybe brainstorm some ways where we could kind of solve this problem. Instead, we got about 2 months notice before both hospitals closed, and even Sacred Heart was supposed to be open until this week. And out of nowhere, about a week and a half before St. Joseph's was scheduled to close in Chippewa Falls, they said, actually, we're going to close Sacred Heart too.
It is just absolutely eerie to go down the street here. It's just a couple of miles to St. Joe's, and to see this completely empty parking lot and know that there is nothing going on in that building. And it is, there's a similarity to what you just said about Northland in Ashland. And that is this whole notion of communicating a crisis before it gets to essentially the point of no return. You know, HSHS stands for Hospital Sisters Health System. A Catholic organization started by nuns who are looking to provide healthcare, and we're not looking to get rich doing it. But it does say something about the corporatization of healthcare in the United States, that you now have these corporate decisions being made to just up and shutter hospitals in areas where you're not making enough money. Now, that's, again, I'm not going to put it all on HSHS. There may be something to say about government reimbursements and a whole host of other things, but this is not going to be the last time we talk about hospitals closing in small communities in Wisconsin, I fear, James, because the pressures are there all over the state.
Yeah, and that's something that Governor Evers, when he was out here to talk about the hospital closures, specifically referenced. It was Medicaid reimbursements. The hospitals weren't getting enough of those, and it was making it very difficult for the business to sustain itself. Now, is a hospital a business? Sure, of course it is. But you also do have that moral responsibility to the public, because people are putting their health care, their lives, into your hands as a hospital. So you should, I mean, if you're not getting enough in terms of Medicaid reimbursements, I don't see how that leads to the short notice closures instead of the, let's look at this over a 2 year process. The business isn't working the way it's supposed to be working, but let's work with city, state, local leaders, whoever, to kind of fix this. Because this is an essential service for a lot of people. A lot of people depend on this service for their healthcare to stay alive, and to just 2 months in be completely gone after the announcement, it's a really tough blow around here.
And the work of local leaders is not made any easier by the political games being played in the state capitol, where there is $15 million available through a previous budget allocation that needed to be tweaked. Republicans did not like the way Governor Evers tweaked it. And as a result, there is this impasse, and the money continues to go unused that could have been put to work, you know, again, kind of cushioning the blow in the Chippewa Valley. But it is very damning evidence against, you know, politicizing something like a healthcare crisis in a Wisconsin community.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think especially with that money, the interesting thing is it was originally earmarked for HSHS Sacred Heart Hospital to expand their psychiatric bed capacity, and they just never used it. So that money was in the 2021-2022 budget for them, and it's just kind of been sitting there. Now we really need it to jumpstart the other emergency departments in the area, jumpstart the healthcare field out here, and it's kind of dying in the Joint Finance Committee.
Yeah, so far, and until something happens there with that, and with the PFAS money, the $125 million that Republicans are still sitting on, rather than cleaning contaminated water all around the state. Now, James, it's been several weeks since we got to visit with you last. We talked a bit about you being, you know, kind of getting acclimated to the Chippewa Valley. So I think it's time to find out, you know, what has new Chippewa Valley resident James Kelly done lately to explore the Chippewa Valley? What's your new favorite thing, or your new favorite food, or what do you still have questions about in this place that you really need a local to answer?
Oh, I'll tell you what, I'm still I'm adjusting to what this summer is going to look like. Right now, my one plan is to work all day and then all night just head out to the lake, float around for a while. I'm a big ocean guy, so you know, switching over to the lake is going to be a bit of a change. But you know, get a little softball in there, maybe some rec basketball, just trying to get outside and enjoy the nice weather, because oh boy, has it been cold over the last couple months.
Yeah, it has, and you're gonna love summer. It's gonna be like the best 3 weeks of your year when it finally gets here.
All 3 weeks of it. Yeah.
But I mean, Lake Wissota up here probably is close as we're going to get to an ocean in terms of the size of it, but we'll work on that. But it sounds like you've got a good plan there in terms of, you know, getting out and moving, from a recreational standpoint. So you seem to have some pretty good coping mechanisms so far.
Oh yeah. So far so good. And you know, now that it's warming up, I'll be able to get out, maybe check out Lining Kugels. I don't know if you knew this, Pat, but it's actually the summer shandy was my favorite drink before I moved here. Had no idea that Lining Kugels was here before I took this job.
Well, there you go. There's always a bunch in my fridge. So, you know, we'll have to get you acclimated once we get my pontoon in, whenever that happens, if we can get some decent temperatures to hang around for, you know, longer than 1 or 2 days here.
Super late July.
Yeah, right. So we'll continue to follow your progress in acclimating to Chippewa Valley life. James Kelly, Civic Media reporter in beautiful downtown Eau Claire, which, oh, by the way, before I forget, just about 3-4 blocks north of you, I just want to say thank you and happy trails to the ladies running the 4:30 a.m. coffee house up there. Recently announced that they're selling the land, selling the business. Don't know what's going to go in there next, but for the past 15 plus years, that has been, they have the best salad in town. They have a lunch salad that is to die for, great coffee, and great company. So, you know, there's still some other great coffee shops there in downtown Chippewa Falls, but definitely wanted to recognize the ladies there for years of good service. Good place.
Oh yeah. I love all this stuff on North Bridge Street, local restaurants, local businesses. It's all great.
It really is. All right. James Kelly, thanks so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Pat. You too.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk to Chad Holmes from the Chad Holmes Show. You can hear him during the next 2 hours, 8 to 10 a.m. on Bull Falls Radio out of Wausau or on the Civic Media app. If you don't have the Civic Media app yet, I'm just going to keep hectoring you. You should get that. Great for listening, calling, texting, and more. Back with Chad after this. You're up north. Chad Holmes is coming up in just a moment. First, a reminder that this coming Saturday is Independent Bookstore Day. Now in its 10th year, the national event encourages book lovers to buy locally. And in return, a lot of those indie booksellers will roll out special deals, live music, much more. And in our daily newsletter that you can sign up for over at upnorthnewswi.com, you can get a link in today's newsletter about 12 independent bookstores around Wisconsin worth checking out. So head over to upnorthnewswi.com. Today's edition also has my article on what didn't get done by the legislature this year in terms of health care and child care. So go to the website and sign up for all that. Chad Holmes is here now for Bull Falls Radio in Wausau. How are we doing today, Mr. Holmes?
It is a beautiful morning in downtown Wausau as my voice gets into
That's a morning, we know. Yeah, I mean, people don't hear all the coughing and gargling that Greg and I do around 5:55. There's robins singing in the trees, and then there's what Greg and I do, which is about as melodious.
I know exactly the feeling, and I know exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately,
look, Greg does not want to chime in on this one at all. It's like, come on, Greg, let's show him a little bit. Me. Oh God! I knew it. He warms up his pipes by saying the following:
I am lining for the county.
That's her vocal warm up lately. That's what we got, Chad.
In a lot of theater, they're like, we just sing Wichita Lineman for 20 straight minutes until we're like, my throat hurts, and then we.
Then we start the show.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to steal that one.
You go for it. Look, you're the one that you talk a lot more than 2 hours because you've got a play-by-play of sports later on in the day. We've only heard you go through one, maybe two little laryngitis episodes there. I'm kind of surprised you don't have more.
I am too. But I tell you, the times that I do it, I mean, you know it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is a certain pain. And I always say to people, it's sort of like if you're coming up on the Olympics and you're Usain Bolt and you have a pulled hamstring. Yep. I mean, it is the same thing where you're not able to let yourself go, and it's just a pain, and there's an embarrassment at times when it gets so bad where you're not able to perform at the level that you're able to.
Well, so, you know, when you say Olympics, though, you know who I thought of right away? Bob Costas. And the most ill-timed case of pink eye ever.
Yes. Oh, that's right.
Yes.
He wanted so hard to tough it out because that was his thing. That was his thing. But like every other Olympic athlete, something poorly timed. Like, no, Bob, you can't. There's pus oozing out on national TV. You can't do it, buddy.
It's also contagious.
Yes. A pulled hammy is not. Yeah. Pink eye is. Oh, gosh. What do you have on the show today? What you been working on over there?
Well, yeah, actually, it's I know you've been talking a little bit about the event at Stevens Point involving the 3rd Congressional District Democratic candidates. I'll be talking this morning at 8:34 to a 7th District Congressional candidate, Kyle Kilborn. And I have to say, I've been... And I know that you, going through election cycles, knows that winning elections is a lot more than just being right on the issues. You have to do a lot of things right in terms mm-hmm. of building a campaign and reaching out and making sure your voice is being heard and raising the money and everything else. And it appears that Kyle Kilborn is doing a lot of those things right. And I know it's still going to be a very uphill battle to unseat Tom Tiffany, and you know, as the 7th District Congressman. But I'm going to be talking to Kyle Kilborn today. I talk a little bit about the issues and obviously what's been going on in Washington and his thoughts on that, but also again about how to build a campaign that can be successful. Because there's one thing to run a campaign and be right and all that stuff, but in the end it doesn't mean anything unless you do the things that allow you to be heard by the voters and give yourself a chance to be successful.
Well, one of the ways to be right, you know, when running for a seat in Congress in the United States of America is maybe not to ally yourself with Vladimir Putin, you know, the way that Tom Tiffany seems to have done over these past couple of years, and continue voting, you know, the way that would make a Russian dictator happy, and not stand up for your allies. So I'll be curious to hear Mr. Kilborn's thoughts on that. And of course, as we know, you know, Tiffany, Eric Hovde, the others are running on national issues, primarily inflation and the border. And so I'll be interested to hear what Kyle Kilborn has to say about immigration reform, about border security. Is he going to talk mostly on the positive policy, here's the things that we need to do, or does he give Tiffany, you know, the strong language he deserves for being an absolute hypocrite on border security, saying, oh, we need this, and then when Donald Trump says, no, kill that bipartisan bill, you know, they kill it.
Well, he has spoken about rural issues as well. That's something I've had him on previously. And in fact, when I was sitting in for you, I had him on to spread it around the state a little bit more than my little neck of the woods here in north central Wisconsin. But he has talked about rural health care. He's talked about some of the rural issues as well. But you're right. I mean, again, when it comes to somebody like Tom Tiffany, you can't just let him slide by. You cannot say, you can't ignore what he has been doing when it comes to saddling up to somebody like Putin's, when it comes to the fact that, again, I mean, I think it needs to be repeated over and over again. He was one of those members of Congress after the insurrection on January the 6th, where the windows were broken and these anarchists came in there and
with their Confederate flag and everything else. Yeah.
And I mean, Tom Tiffany was still one of those guys who said, no, I'm not going to certify this election. I mean, that should be, again, when you look at the biography of Tom Tiffany as a congressman, that should be right up there.
Modi immediately disqualified him.
Yes. Yeah. What did Tom Tiffany do as a congressman? He mm-hmm. voted to decertify an election after the insurrection January 6th.
Yeah. I mean, that stain will never be erased from his record. And he will, I'm sure he is crowing that he voted no over the weekend on Ukraine aid, on Israel aid, on Taiwan aid, making the case that we shouldn't be sending money outside the country when we haven't taken care of our own border. Well, you had a chance to take care of the border, you didn't. And you're not really proposing anything else for regular Americans. And so, it's so much easier to be against something than for something. So I expect to hear more of that from Kyle and from you.
Real fast. Yeah. My final statement is those people like Tiffany and others in the Republican Party, you say, we shouldn't be spending money outside the country. We should spend it here. They vote not to spend it outside the country, and then they vote not to spend it here either.
Exactly. Again, there's just nothing to show for it. Chad Holmes, hear him next on Bull Falls Radio. Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
Thank you, guys.
Mr. Bach will be back with Matt and Air on Air right after that two-hour coffee break. Enjoy that. I'm sorry, show prep. Got to get my language right here. I do. I get you. Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Thanks for tuning in, joining us up north. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning, 6 a.m.